Okay, alhamdulillah, wa salatu wassalamu ala rasulillah, amma ba'd. So in this second segment of our Saturday night halaqa, that's what we agreed on last time, right? SNH, Saturday night halaqa. So in our second segment, we're going to do fiqh. That's what we've been doing. And inshallah today, I want to talk about najasa. And this is maybe the last topic we will cover in the theme of purification. So after we finish purification, tahara, we're going to graduate into salat. And we'll start talking about salat. And salat is huge. There's so much to cover in salat. And there's so much details and rules. It's really important to learn salat because this is the one thing we do every day, five times a day. So we want to learn it right. So this is usually the last topic. There's another topic that I don't think I'm going to discuss here that usually you find in the books of fiqh, and that is the topic of menstruation. So that's specific to women. So inshallah, I think the last topic we'll discuss in the theme of tahara is najasa. So we mentioned najasa before, few times, but we haven't had a chance to talk about it in detail. So inshallah today we'll talk about that concept in detail so we understand what it is and how we can avoid it, how we can cleanse from it, how we can clean ourselves from it, and so forth. Okay. First, what is najasa? And I'm using the Arabic word because if you were to translate najasa, some people might say, well, it is filth, something that is impure, something that is not clean, but this is not good enough. Because the scholars of Islam have a very specific definition of najasa. So one of the definitions, I'll use maybe a couple. One of the definitions of najasa is, I'll say it in Arabic first, and then we'll go over the meaning. كُلُّ مُسْتَقْذَرْ يَمْنَعُ مِنْ صِحَّةِ الصَّلَاةِ لو كان في البدن أو الثوب أو المكان. And if you're taking notes, it's really good to capture the definitions and the, if I talk about a certain classification, like different types and stuff, this is the things you want to record. So the definition of najasa is every substance. So here we're talking about something, substance. Unlike hadath, if you remember hadath, it is a state. It's not something you can see. Like when you lose your wudu, that's not something you could see. It is a hadath. It's a state. It's not a substance. So that is one of the big differences between najasa and hadath. Hadath is a state you're in. Najasa is a substance. Okay. So it is usually a substance that is gross. It's filthy, number one. But that's not enough. Because if you say, well, everything filthy is najasa, well, some people can come and say sweat is filthy or gross. You could say mucus is gross, but they're not impure. In the definition of fiqh, in the definition of jurisprudence, your sweat, your saliva, your mucus are pure. Meaning, if they're on you, you can still pray. If you have some mucus on your body, there's nothing wrong with you praying. So this is why it is important to add. It's not enough to say gross, because we have lots of gross stuff that are not considered najasa. So najasa is every substance that is gross that will prevent us from prayer. That is the real definition. Any substance that is gross that will prevent you from prayer. And it will prevent you from prayer whether it is on your body, on your clothing, or on the place of prayer. Like on the carpet in front of you, or the sajada, you know, the rug, anything you pray on, that also has to be clean. It cannot have najasa on it. Okay? So that's one of the definitions of najasa. Now, another interesting definition, it has to do, and we have to maybe establish some context. And this is why I want to also cover that as well. Because you might read it in some books of fiqh if you do in the future. And you may get a little confused. Because the scholars say, well, najasa is something you cannot consume. And you say, duh, of course. Why is it even there? But there's a reason for it. Because when scholars talk about things that we're not allowed to consume as Muslims, najasa is one of the main categories. But there are other categories that we're not allowed to consume as Muslims. So quickly, they say, ما يحرم تناوله في أكل أو شرب أو بناء وسلم. So when we say consume, by the way, consume does not just mean eating and drinking. When scholars talk about يعني تناول, it also includes using it, like in your clothing, in any form of beautification, or you know, so it's on your clothing, or you know, using it in any form. So they say those things you're not allowed to use, and one of them is najasa. So let us talk a bit more about that. And I hope upstairs you could hear me now. That's the closest I can get to the mic. What are the things that we're not allowed to consume as Muslims? Basically, there are five categories. There are five categories. Number one, anything that has sanctity, you cannot like use for your advantage. You cannot use for your service. Now, I could not find a really good example, but the scholars mentioned this, I would say, funny example. They say, for example, the body of a dead person has sanctity, and therefore, you cannot use it. Like, you cannot, for example, use it for decoration. Like, you cannot put it in the house and say, I know what you're thinking. But I could not think of a better example. But the point is, anything of sanctity, there are other things that are, you know, holy, or they have some sanctity, and those we cannot use. Like I said, so when we say استعمال, استعمال is for, you know, consumption, which means eating and drinking. It could mean wearing. It could mean decoration in the house. هذا استعمال. For example, when we talk about using, you know, the utensils. And the Prophet, for example, said you cannot eat and drink in gold and silver plates. That is considered استعمال. That is considered use, because you use it to eat. Or you use it to make wudu in the old days. So that's all under use. So never mind the first category. It's not, I didn't have time to think about it more. But anything that has sanctity, usually scholars say you cannot use it. Because usually when you use something, it kind of undermines the sanctity of that thing. Enough about that. Next. The second thing that we're not allowed to consume is anything that is gross, even if it is pure. So we're not allowed to consume things like, again, it's gross, so we're not going to do it, but it is also haram to consume because it is gross. And this is something interesting about Islam, that anything that is gross is also haram to consume, by definition. And we already mentioned, you know, the mucus, the sweat, etc. And again, the difference is, I mean, obviously you can swallow your saliva, but the point is to, you know, drink it, like to gather it. And again, not very relevant, but this is, you know, what the scholars mentioned in their books, just to illustrate the point. Yes, what? Okay. So the question is, what about dead animals? So obviously there are different categories. They're animals we're not supposed to eat. Those animals, when they die, they become impure automatically. Let me finish all the categories. Maybe I'll answer your question. Now, there are animals we're allowed to eat. Those animals, if they're slaughtered correctly, then they are pure. You cannot eat something that is impure. But if they're slaughtered incorrectly, like for example, some people, they come and they shoot the goat. You cannot eat a goat that was shot. That is haram to eat because it was not slaughtered properly. And therefore, it becomes impure because it was not slaughtered properly. Okay. We'll get there, inshallah. I mean, this is maybe it's gonna come up later. The third category, which is important, is that we're not allowed to consume something that is harmful. So for example, you're not allowed to consume poison, even if it is pure. And poison is pure, meaning it's not filthy, but you're not allowed to consume it. It's haram. Because you're not allowed to inflict harm on yourself. That's the main reason. You're not allowed to inflict harm on yourself. And likewise, you're not allowed to consume anything that's harmful, not just poison. Like some people, I don't know if it is true, but I see it sometimes in some videos or people talk about it. People eating glass and they think it's cool. It's haram because consuming anything that's harmful, I don't care if it is a trick or not, you think it's funny, it is not allowed because consuming anything that is harmful to the body is haram. So you cannot say, well, I'm camping, I want to check the, you know, these rocks look, you know, appealing, they're delicious, I'll try and see. No, we can't, because rocks are harmful to the human body. The fourth thing that is that we're not allowed to consume is anything that has influence on your intellect, that can modify your intellectual mood. And obviously, the two main categories under there is what? Alcohol, any intoxicants, and drugs. These are the two categories that can modify, يؤثر على العقل, anything that can modify your mental state. And obviously, the effect of alcohol is different than the effect of drugs, but both do have an effect on the mind. They can alter the state of the mind, regardless of how they do it, how they alter the state of the mind. Anything that alters the state of the mind and puts you in a different state, high or low, wherever it is considered haram to consume. So why do we talk about that when we talk about najasa? Is because the scholars usually, they list all of that and then they say at the end, anything that is not under those categories above is by definition najasa. This is how they define najasa. Anything that you're not allowed to consume but does not belong to any other category is by default najasa. This is one way they do it. I don't know why, but it's like, you know, doing this. But you get the idea. This is one way to define najasa, is to say anything that you cannot consume that does not belong to any other category, like it is not harmful by itself, yani, and it does not have the influence, and all of the other categories, okay? You had a question. You're baffled, you're so confused.
I don't know who went in yet.
Okay. What is it that? What about everybody else? Was this too hard? It did sound a bit convoluted, right?
So, in other words, the five categories of things we forbidden to use are.
Okay, let me repeat. There are five categories we're not allowed to consume, and one of them is najasa. As simple as that, is the najasa, the impurity. And that's usually the last category. Does that make sense? So first one, anything that has sanctity. Second one, anything that is harmful. The third one is anything that is gross. Fourth one is anything that can alter your mental state. And the last one, the fifth one, is anything that is impure. That is najasa. So by default, we're not allowed, it is haram to consume anything that is najasa. And that also could answer the question, what about the dead animal? Well, the dead animal, by definition, if it is dead, if it's not slaughtered properly, by definition, it is najasa. And this is why we cannot, one reason why we cannot consume it. If they die of a natural death, he's asking, that is also not the proper way of a dhabiha. It is not considered dhabiha if they die naturally, from a natural death. Only if they're slaughtered according to Islamic law, then they're considered, yes, over there.
The definition of gross might differ from society to society. So what's
Yes, thank you. This is maybe the most contested category because of that. So the question is, well, the definition of gross differ from one society to another, from one culture to another, from maybe one person to another. So how do we determine that? And to me, there's not a good answer. Even the Prophet himself, alayhi salatu wasalam, we know that there's certain foods he did not like. Like one time, and you may not like either, they brought like a lizard, a big lizard. It's a, I don't know if it is a lizard. It's a, some form of a big lizard in the desert. Because it's a desert animal. And they were eating it in front of him. And they offered the Prophet, alayhi salam, they offered the Prophet, you know, declined. And he said, "A'afu," you know, like, I'm not crazy about it. I don't crave it, basically. So he did not eat from that animal. But he did not say it's haram. So he allowed the companions, he watched the companions eating from it. But he did not eat from it. Because to him, it was gross. There was another incident when he was offered a rabbit. And the same thing happened. He did not eat from the rabbit. You know, because he, you know, he did not feel like it. He did not feel like he could eat a rabbit. So to him, it was kind of gross. But to you, it might be delish, right? You love it. It's maybe a delicacy you crave for, right? What is it? Mulukhiya. Oh, yeah. That's a famous dish. I think it's an Egyptian dish. It's a mulukhiya with rabbits. Mulukhiya, I don't know how you translate mulukhiya. Some grass, right? Or leaf. What about, so a good question, what about a prescribed medication from the doctor? The rule here is, if it is a necessity, like there's no other medication that does the job, then it becomes okay, because it is a necessity. For example, there are many people who are in the hospital, and they're under severe pain, and the only way to alleviate the pain, or at least to reduce it, is to, for example, take morphine, or some kind of an addictive drug, or a drug. Then in that case, it becomes okay because there's no other way. And there's pain, you have to treat the pain, and there's no other way to do it. So in that case, it becomes allowed.
There's drugs for mentally ill people that are taken just to change your mind.
Again, here we're talking about cases of necessity. And tadawi bil haram, there's a long topic about, is it okay to use medication that supposedly is haram to treat somebody? And again, the easy answer is, if there is no other medication, just remember this rule, no other medication except this medication, and usually it is haram. In normal cases, it is haram, it becomes okay, it becomes allowed for that necessity only. So if you need to treat the mental patient, and this is the only medication you have, and it alters the state of the mind, it becomes okay. Because it is not a recreational drug. This is why we call them recreational. Recreational, it means it's not medical. So everybody understands the difference between recreational and medical drugs. Medical drugs have one function. Recreational, they do what? Recreation. So it is different. Okay.
Basically, all drugs prescribed or given to change the mind of the patient, to distract the patient from feeling the pain. Is that true?
I'm not a doctor, and I hope you're not talking about sugar pills, because, but no doubt, for any treatment, there is a psychological side to it. And this is why it is important to be with the patient and to provide this comfort and so forth, because that would help the patient heal faster. No doubt about that. But whether every medication has a mental effect or it changes or alters the mind, I have no idea. I don't think. I mean, some of them are purely physical. But again, we should know the rule. Yes.
Or harmful. Mm-hmm. What if, like, you have, example, you get a temporary side effect from consuming something? Example, if you eat some kind of fruit and you have like a small amount of pain for like a short amount of time, but then you feel normal. Is that still considered unlawful to consume, or are you still allowed?
A very good question. The question is, what if the drug, or what if the medical drug or the medicine has some side effect that's considered harm.
Oh,
food. Oh. Food, not drug.
Food or like fruit. Example, if I eat a fruit or any kind of fruit, I have a small reaction, and then after a while, I get normal.
Okay. So the question is, what about a food? Because we talked about one category where it is haram to consume is something that is harmful. So he's asking, what about a food that might cause some allergy, at least a temporary reaction? Is that allowed to consume? Again, it comes to a point where you have to weigh the harm and the benefit. And this is another important rule in Islam. So for example, if the harm is very limited, and you know it's not going to cause a heart attack or a stroke or something like that, it's just a minor reaction, you are the judge. You weigh that, and if it's not that bad, no problem. If it becomes harmful to a point where like it's going to cause a serious illness or a visit to the hospital or something like that, you're not supposed to harm yourself. So really, it's common sense. Whatever causes real harm. And the scholars have another rule. They say, الضرورة تقدر بقدرها. Everything is weighed. So you estimate that harm. And you weigh that harm and see how bad it is. Okay. All right. So this is, again, to show us where najasa fits into the bigger picture. The bigger picture, everything we're not supposed to consume, and then najasa comes there. Now, there's another way of looking at najasa, and that is how we cleanse it. So we can categorize najasa according to how we cleanse it. And this is why scholars come up with three types of najasa. One which is light, one which is like medium in the middle, and one which is heavy. So al-mukhaffafa, the light one, is something that does not require even a wash. It doesn't require washing. It only requires sprinkling of water. Sprinkling of water. And the maybe one or two examples. One example is the urine of the baby boy when it's still breastfeeding or when it's still having milk. As soon as it has something else, that category is not there, or it doesn't belong to that category anymore. So that is considered a light najasa. And the only thing you have to do is sprinkle water. You don't have to wash it. You don't have to pour water. You just sprinkle water. That is the difference. Now, some people might say, why is it only the baby boy and not the baby girl? The reason is not because there is a difference, per se, like discrimination against baby girls. No. The reason was because, I mean, two reasons. One is because at least back then, the baby boys were handled much more. So it was a common case. And Islam wanted to find an easy way for that situation, for that scenario. Because it was really hard to keep washing, washing, washing. That's why the Prophet said it's enough to sprinkle. So it's not because boys are better than girls or something like that. Don't go and tease your sister tonight. No. It's because it's just to make it easy. And it, also because it spreads more. I don't have to talk more about that. But so it's because of those reasons the Prophet made it easy to cleanse. The second one is the most common one. It's a medium najasa. And that's almost all categories of najasa. And that for that, all you have to do is clean. Like you wash, you pour water on the najasa. And you pour enough that the actual substance is cleared, is gone. If it's not gone, you have to keep washing until it is gone. So that is the second type. And the third type is the heavy, al-mughallaba, the heavy najasa, and that is limited only to the dog and the pig. And that's not according to all the madhahib. As we mentioned before, in the Maliki madhab, these are considered clean. The reason is because they say every animal that is alive and kicking, is considered clean by default, including the dog and the pig. This is the Maliki madhab. But the other madhahib, the other schools, they say that for the dog and the pig, it's the highest level of impurity. And the reason they say that is because of the hadith that says you have to cleanse it seven times one with soil or earth. So that's the reason they say it is the height of impurity. So I just gave you the summary and the difference between the schools. So that's another way of looking at the najasa. All right. Let me also give you a couple more rules, inshallah, before we finish. Yes?
You know, you said the dog was impurity, like the highest level of impurity. So what about in Surah Al-Kahf, when the companions were in the cave, didn't they have a dog with them?
Nice. Good question. I love good questions. The question was, if you claim that a dog was the height of impurity, by the way, it was not my claim. I said some schools of fiqh, of Islamic law, they say that it is the most impure. And but there are some other schools, like the Maliki, maybe you're Maliki, I don't know, Maliki in hiding. They say it is not impure. But what about these people who had a dog with them? I mean, it wasn't just like once, that dog lived with them for, you know, years, right? And they were with the dog all the time. Well, there could be a couple of answers to that. Number one, the law of the people before us does not have to be our law. So there could be a difference in law. Like the law of Moses, for example, is not the same as our law. There could be some similarities and there's some differences too. There's some similarities and there's some differences. The law of Jesus does not have to be our law. There could be some similarities, there could be some differences. For example, if we have something very clear in our religion, like in the Hadith, in the Quran, that is different than what we had or what the people before us had, what do we follow in that case? We have something clear in Quran or in the Sunnah, and it seems to contradict or is different than the law of Moses or some other people before us. What do we follow? We follow our law. So it could be one. It could be an example of that or a case of that. And the reason is of the hadith. It's a narration from the Prophet. He said, if a dog comes and he drinks, he licks your vessel, you know, the pot, whatever you put water in. He said, you pour that water, you get rid of the water, and you cleanse it seven times. You rinse it seven times with water and one time with earth. Like you get some soil and you also rub it. And then you wash it. So this is why they said it is impure. Because of the instruction from the Prophet, peace be upon him. Yes. Cats. No, cats are okay. They're not impure. Meaning, if they drink from a water pot you have, it's okay, it's still clean. I mean, you're not going to drink from it, but it's clean. Like, meaning, if it touches you, or if you dip your hand in it, it's fine. Because cats are not considered impure while alive.
But they're sneaky.
If you're not a cat person, that's totally fine. I have nothing against cats or dogs. See, people in this country, you have two types of people. The dog people and the cat people. I notice most movies are pro-dogs, though. Anti-cats. Cats are usually evil. I don't know why. It's not fair. Huh? Yeah, smart and witty and... Okay. Yes. I'm sorry?
The water that is licked by a cat. So tahir for some.
Okay. The question is, the water that is leaked by a cat, I assume you mean urine. No? Yes?
Oh, yes.
Urine. So there's a rule everybody should remember. The urine, the dropping, the feces of something you cannot eat is by definition impure. Najasa. Any animal we're not supposed to eat, and cats are from that category, we're not supposed to eat, we cannot eat cats, the haram. Although there are some countries in the Far East, they do eat dogs and cats, but they're totally haram. So any animal we're not supposed to eat, by definition, all their droppings, urine, feces, whatever, is impure. It is najasa or najis. Now, what about the animals we can eat? What about the animals like the sheep and the goat and the cow and the camel? What about those? Is there dropping and feces and all of that urine? Is it considered impure?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes. You're a Shafi'i. No, you're a Maliki. No, I'm not kidding. There's a difference of opinion. So yes, the Malikis and the Hanbalis, they say that it is pure, that the urine and the feces of the animal we can eat, such as the sheep and the goat and the camel and etc., that those are pure. What does it mean pure? Again, it's filthy, of course. We're not talking about something gross. We're talking about najasa here. Exactly. So they're considered. They're not considered najasa. That is the Malik and the Hanbali madhab. The Hanafi and the Shafi'i, they say it is impure. It is najasa. Allahu a'lam. This is really hard to resolve, by the way. Because they both rely on the same hadith. And this hadith was, some people came to Medina, and they were Bedouins, and some of them were shepherds, and they got sick when they started living in Medina, because they were used to the desert and the, you know. So the Prophet ﷺ prescribed for them, and you're going to be shocked, he prescribed for them two things, the milk and the urine of camels. So now our scholars have said, well, if they're allowed to drink from that urine, either it is pure because you cannot consume najasa, or it is najasa, like the Shafi'i said. The Shafi'is, they said, it's still impure, but it was allowed because of necessity. Like, there was no other option. That was the only thing available. So, therefore, the Prophet allowed it.
The best thing to do is just to treat it as it's...
If you want to be on the safe side, be a Shafi'i or a Hanafi for that, in that particular case.
Shafi'i of camels and Hanafi?
Huh?
The hadith talks about Aban al-Ibli wa Abwaliha. I think it was camels, not cows.
Did I say cow?
Camel.
I thought I said camel. You're maybe too far. I thought I said camel. Okay. Yeah, but you're right. It was camels, yeah. Yeah, again, I'm not recommending that. I'm just saying this hadith, this narration was used as a proof for that, yes. So I want to, inshallah, we're about 30 minutes. I don't want to make it too longer. Do we have pizza?
Yeah.
Oh, dang. Do you guys want to continue now? Because I still have a few more things. Or you want to maybe continue next time? Because I still have like few things about najasa. I want to
continue.
Yes?
Can you reiterate about the dog and the najasa of the dog? Because there is some confusion. There's a lot of people that are in touch with this animal here.
Yes. Anything that is wet about the dog, according to the, like, again, we have different schools. The majority of the schools, they say the dog is impure. But that means that the wet part, like especially the saliva, because if you touch the hair of the dog where it is dry, there's nothing that's going to, like, transfer to you. It's dry. So najasa does not transfer through solid. It has to be something that gets on your hand. If nothing gets on your hand, then you're fine. The dog is still najis, but you did not contract the najasa, if you will.
So if he touches your clothes from his mouth or something...
If it is wet, then it becomes najis.
You have to wash it.
But again, if you follow the Maliki Madhab, if you want to follow that rukhsa, that concession, then it's fine.
You have to wash it with dirt?
No. Okay, that's good. So the scholars mentioned that that dirt condition is specific for the vessel, but for the clothing, you rub it. So, like, and by the way, you can rub it, yani, maybe with even anything that is coarse, Like it could be sponge, soap, and water.
So in the washer or dryer is good.
Yes, I mean this is I was going to mention that later. For all kinds of najasa, the washer is good. Why? Because there's one rule we have to understand. When you clean najasa, so let's say you have water here and you have najasa here. And you're going to clean the najasa. It's totally wrong to put the najasa in water because that will make the water impure. What should happen, you should take the water and pour it on the najasa. That's going to cleanse the najasa. And that's what happens in the washer usually. You put the clothing that is dirty or filthy or najis, and then water comes and goes through the clothing. And then, you know, you have it turns and, you know, and then it dries. So inshallah, it should be good. Because the water is introduced, not the other way around.
I mean, the issue of the 7 times is not there.
Oh, you have more than 7 times in the washer. Either you convert to the Maliki Madhab, or
no.
I'll look it up, inshallah. I remember when I studied with the Sheikh, for the clothing, it was not as hard as the vessel, as the pot. Meaning, you just wash it. You just wash it with water. Correct. That's what I'm saying. Like, if it, let's say it's on your, you know, on clothing.
My shoes or my like bottom of my feet, my pants.
If you cannot pour water on it, then you cannot clean it. Then what can you do? Yes. Now, okay. One more thing we mentioned last time, and this is a rule for everything. If you're not able to satisfy a certain condition, and the time of prayer is gonna, you know, exit or pass, in that case you pray whatever you are, however you are, because you don't want to miss the prayer. That's also another thing. Yes. Good. So the question is, you talked about dead animals. What about dead fish? Alhamdulillah, we're getting a lot of good questions. I'm really happy. We're making some progress. I was going to say next time, if we finish the material today, next time we should have like a quiz or maybe even like a competition. Because we finished all of Tahara, purification, and we want to see if you can graduate to Salat. So if we finish, I don't know if we're going to finish. If we don't finish, maybe we can wait one more time. But if we finish today, I'll make the announcement at the end that we're going to have a competition next time. And we'll have maybe some prizes. So see who wins. So let me finish the question. So the question was, you mentioned dead animals, that they are impure if they're not, you know, slaughtered properly. What about dead fish? Well, the first answer is all fish are dead because there's no such a thing as the biha. You don't slaughter fish. So by definition, any fish that dies is dead fish. But is it halal or haram? Of course, it is halal because the Prophet ﷺ told us that all the seafood is halal. There is a difference of opinion about shellfish, but leave that on side for a minute. Fish, at least. Yeah, any fish. Even the fish that... Actually, even the fish that feeds on other animals, on other fish. Do you guys know, there's actually a nice story in, I think, Imam Bukhari, that the Sahaba, one time they were traveling, and they were starving, and then they caught a whale. Or maybe the whale was already dead. I don't think they caught it. They found it, yes. Catching. Funny. They kept feeding on it for days, like maybe 20 days. And there were a number of them. And we know the whale feeds on other animals, so it's totally fine. There's no exception. When it comes to seafood or to at least fish, all fish is halal and all fish is pure by definition. All fish is pure and is halal. No exception. And in my opinion, shellfish as well. Because the Prophet ﷺ said, "Al-bahr al-tahuru ma'uha al-hillu maytatu." He did not make any exception. He said, the seawater or the sea everything, he said, all the water in the sea is pure. You can make wudu with salt water. That's fine. And all the dead animals in it is halal. Okay? Al-hillu maytatu. So all the sea animals, not any dead animal in the sea, but all the sea animals that die in the water is halal. Okay. I mean, I still want to talk a bit about like certain types of najasa. I haven't had a chance to do that today, so maybe we'll postpone it the next time. Because, alhamdulillah, we had a good amount of questions, and I think it's important to address all the questions so you don't have any, any confusion in your mind. So, inshallah, before we eat, before we break, any other questions about najasa? At least, was everything we discussed today clear? Yes. We'll find out in the competition. But yes.
So you said we have the things that we cannot use. So you said knowing that the najasa falls on the other side of that. Is that what you said?
Okay. So we said there are five categories of things we cannot use.
Right.
And we started with 1, 2, 3, 4. And then we said everything else falls under najasa. This is why scholars, when they talk about najasa, they also talk about the other things that we cannot use. So therefore, you could conclude that anything that you cannot use but is not one of the four categories must be a najasa category.
Oh,
yeah.
Now,
this is, I mean, I know it's not a straightforward way of thinking, but this is what they had in mind. Yes?
Earlier, you lamented the absence or the lack of scholars in Islam, present day.
Present day, yes.
How can we, before we learn more about our religion, we should be allowed to do so by our so-called rulers. Because if you criticize something, you know what happens.
Okay, so the question is, I lamented earlier about the fact that we don't have enough scholars or people of knowledge. But then he's asking, how is that possible if our rulers do not, like it? Or and if we speak against a certain injustice, you know what happens? Yeah, I feel like this is a political question. I'm not going to take it. I don't want to be in trouble. All I'm going to say, alhamdulillah, you live in this country. You don't have the same restrictions. Not yet, anyways. So take the opportunity now. Don't wait too long. Yes. I'm sorry? Okay. Using dead bodies to study? Like human bodies? That's a good question. Let's wait till next time. Maybe I'll look into it more. I'm not sure. Because there is a hadith of the Prophet ﷺ that says, كَسْرُ عِظَامِ الْمُسْلِمِ مَيْتًا كَكَسْرِهِ حَيًّا. To break the bones of a dead believer, at least, he said, in that case, is like breaking it while alive. So at least the bones should not be broken. This is a hadith of the Prophet ﷺ. But let me see what the scholars have said. Jazakumullah khair. Okay, Jazakumullah khair. Thank you. Subhanak Allahumma bihamdik. Nashhadu an la ilaha illa anta nastaghfiruka wa natubu ilayk. Wal 'asr innal insana lafi khusr. Illa alladhina amanu wa 'amilu s-salihat wa tawassaw bil haqqi wa tawassaw bis sabr. Barakallahu fikum wa assalamu alaykum.
Jazakumullah khair.